evening, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, being brought to you from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you on Super Bowl Sunday. In fact, the game is being played as we speak. This is Sunday, February 4th, 2007. During our broadcast, you may reach us via AIM phone at area code 903-551-2186. If you are listening via our blog talk radio website, simply dial the number on the screen. At any time, please send us your comments and questions to comments at libertytalkradio.com, and we'll try to answer them during our next broadcast. Folks, this station is your antidote to popular talk radio, where you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, Rome, Paris, or Stalingrad. We must take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. It's time to shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. And now, on to our program. Good evening, everyone, and happy Super Bowl Sunday. I understand that the Indianapolis Colts are romping the Chicago Bears at this point, and but the game is not over yet, but we still will broadcast. This evening, we are pleased to have a guest. Her name is Allison Moore. She is an American Muslim, and she's here to talk to us about the position or the situation that the Muslims find themselves here in America. Allison was actually born on an Air Force base, Army base rather, in Fort Lee, Virginia. Her father served in Vietnam. She moved to Tulsa in 1970 and grew up in Tulsa. She attended Jenks High School, graduated from Tulsa University in 1989 with a marketing degree, graduated from OU in 2001 with a master's in human relations. She began studying Islam in 1990 and converted after reading and analyzing the Quran. She converted in 1991. She's been a Muslim for 16 years, active in the Tulsa interfaith community, member of the Islamic Society of Tulsa, performs public relations work over the last 10 years, focusing on educating the public about Islam and Muslims. She's the editor of the Islamic, or was the editor of the Islamic Society of Tulsa newsletter from 2001 to 2006. She teaches Sunday school classes, and in 2000, she founded and currently facilitates a Muslims women support group. She's a graduate of the Leadership Tulsa in 2005, and her life goal is to fight the oppression of any people and to assist the poor, the needy, the destitute, and those in need and lost souls. And with that, I present to you Allison Moore. Good evening, Allison. Thank you so much for being here this evening.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You are a very unusual person that would accept an invitation to speak live on a radio program during Super Bowl Sunday.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. And I'm very excited to talk to everybody about Muslims in America and the current issues that we're facing.
Well, I would have to agree with you that we don't hear enough, and what we do hear, I think, is very stilted, and we need to clear the air. We need to have more interchange, and hopefully this station will at least start that. So thank you for being here this evening. I have some just general questions that I am dying to ask you, but of course, as I always do, I always lose my notes that I have in front of me. Here they are. I put myself back when I was in school, and I guess the last thing on my mind was religion back then, but yet you converted to a religion, I guess. And how did this occur? What motivated you? What started it? And what decided you to go from where you were to where you are today?
Well, actually, when I attended university at the University of Tulsa, there were a lot of international students there that I became friends with. And the engineering department had many Arab students. And in 1989, after having several Arab friends, I decided to start looking at Islam with the intention of converting them to Christianity. And I started studying the basics of the religion, and in 1990 I started reading the Quran and doing a biblical Quranic analysis, comparing the Bible and the Quran. And lo and behold, to my surprise, it wasn't part of my life plan. I felt that I had to convert and become Muslim because I believed the message and I thought it was truly a message from God.
Okay. Well, what was it but that convinced you that this was the message, I guess, is the question?
I really found the concept of personal accountability attractive. I already believed in God, so I wasn't looking for an answer as whether or not a God existed, but I didn't see any fallacies in the Quran. There's a lot of science in the Quran. Many of the scientific examples in the Quran were just recently discovered within the last 100 years, which authenticated the book to me. And then I like the concept of personal accountability through doing good works or bad works throughout your life, and then a day of judgment and God judging people and accepting those who do good deeds, getting the final reward, which would be heaven. And that's why I chose Islam.
I would suspect that you have found, even more so than myself or the man on the street, that Islam, Muslim, even the terms are misunderstood. Now,
yes.
Am I to understand that when we say Islam, we are referring to the religion?
Yes.
And when we say Muslim, we are referring to someone who believes in Islam.
Yeah, Islam's the religion and Muslim is the person.
Is the person. Now, since I was of Italian descent, if I would convert to Islam, would I still be an Italian or would I be a Muslim?
You'd be an Italian Muslim.
Oh, I'd be an Italian Muslim. Okay. I really didn't know. That was not a trick question. Okay. I would be an Italian. Okay, so you are whatever nationality you are.
American Muslim.
You're an American Muslim. Okay. And your religion obviously has to be Islam. Okay, we got that. I would venture to say that we couldn't find one person in 20 that understood that or even knew that. Because I would use those terms interchangeably, but I never understood why.
Yes, and that happens all the time.
Okay. I guess tonight we want to talk about the plight of the American Muslim or Islam in general here in the United States. Is there something that how do you want to start that? I'm going to leave that up to you.
I think I'd like to talk about the events of September 11th and prior to September 11th. The only issue that Muslims had in the United States was two very simple issues, and they had to do with the workplace. And there is an organization called the Council of American Islamic Relations, which is an advocacy group for Muslims. And the two issues that Muslims had are the right to pray during break at work, because Muslims are required to pray 5 times a day. And the other issue that many Muslim women would face is the right to wear the headscarf. Those were the only two issues that Muslims were really concerned about. However, after the attacks of September 11th, we had a whole plethora of issues that developed. And I would like to point out that the very first organization in the United States to issue a press release to over 25,000 news agencies in the United States was the Council on American Islamic Relations. And they said in their press release that Muslims and Islam strictly forbids terrorism of any kind. Unfortunately, and to our dismay, these statements were not aired on mainstream media. And since that point in time, we have really been working diligently to get the message out there that mainstream Muslims are against terrorism. Those people that hijacked those planes, they also hijacked our religion. Those people that killed all of those innocent human beings on that day are not martyrs in our religion, contrary to what many people think. And in Islam, if you take a innocent life of a man, woman, or child, your destiny is hell. But for some strange reason, many Americans are not getting the message, and we're very concerned about that.
Well, I could understand why Americans, how Americans view Islam or Muslims.
Yeah, part of the problem is that we really feel that what drives content today on mainstream media is advertising dollars. You know, corporate America has taken over. We know it's taken over in the pharmaceutical market and often to our own detriment, and it's also taken over in, you know, the media. And Muslims getting on TV and denouncing terrorism is not as exciting and does not drive corporate America as much as the terror and fear stories do of minority, less than 1% of the Muslim population of the world, who are these radicals that we vehemently disagree with. You know, that story brings in much more or higher ratings than us at a podium saying we're against terrorism.
Let me give you a parallel, if you will. I'm almost 64 years old. I've been in business, so you can imagine I've been through a lot. Let's put it that way. I will not bore you with the details. And I've made mention to this. I said, you know, it's really interesting. Those people who had intentionally and very maliciously done me wrong. I mean, really did things that you have to be a person with no conscience to do. Not just a mistake or maybe something a little selfish, but something, I mean, like robbing everything I own, etc., or literally destroying my company and trying to sell it to somebody else. I mean, bad stuff that's deliberate. I said, and I've made mention this to Christian friends of mine. I have many Christian friends. Saying, you know, what really bothers me is not that they did that, but they did that because they did that and they professed to be very religious. And they were. They were always, the people who always did me the worst were those people who, just by luck, were overtly religious, and they just happened to be Christians. Now, I know that doesn't talk for every Christian. Don't get me wrong. Right. But the response I get to that is, well, they're not true Christians. You know, they're not real Christians, right? That's the answer I get. And my response to them is say, well, have you ever done anything wrong? They go, yes. I said, then you must not be a real Christian. See, my point being is this, is that Christians do, everybody in every religion does some real bad things. And we do real bad things, we say, they're not Christians. So then I say it's a parallel from what you're saying.
Yes.
Muslims who do real bad things are not really Muslims. See, I've heard that before.
Yeah.
So I'm a natural skeptic to that logic, if you will, okay? And so when I hear that, I go, oh, yeah, you know, you. I can tell you a few stories about other religions where I heard the same thing. How do you respond to that?
Well, we had a sheikh visit, or which is like a priest, visit town one time, and he said, if you judge Islam by the people, you're not going to find the pure religion. You have to read the book. You have to read the Quran. And I think that's true. This isn't heaven. This world is full of good people and evil people. And those people who are good, hopefully they're striving to be better. And then those people who take religion and they read it and twist it, those people that hit those buildings are no different than the Jim Joneses and the David Koreshes of the Christian world. I mean, they exist in every religion. And I think that, unfortunately, we're just in a situation here where we have to work with, you know, good and evil people in this world.
When we as just the plain, common person sitting down watching television or whatever, we see the news, and we hear constantly Shia, the Shia Muslims and the Sunnis. What is the difference between those two sects?
Okay. Well, actually, the Sunni Muslims account for 85% of the Muslims worldwide, and the Shia account for 15%. If a Shia and a Sunni, and in Tulsa, we have Shia and Sunnis and Sufis all going to the same mosque or place of worship, and we all pray side by side, which is a little unusual for some, you know, parts of the world. You wouldn't find that. But here we all attend the same place, and we pray the same. We read the same book. But the difference between Sunni and Shia has to do with the prophet's cousin. His name was Ali. And after the prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, died, there was a difference in opinion as to who should be the next leader, and it caused a split in amongst the Muslims, and that split became the Sunni-Shiite split.
Why, from a person who's not involved in that religion or any religion, I'll be honest with, but to me that seems like a incidental. I mean, big deal. If you're all reading from the same book, what difference does it make? I mean, who succeeds whom? Isn't that a very earthly, very...
You know, as an American Muslim, I don't see that it makes that much of a difference. In fact, we, in the Quran, God says not to create divisions within one's religion. And so as an American Muslim, I don't like to go around and say this is a Sunni, this is a Shiite person, because it creates divisions. And once you have divisions, you have fighting, and then you have people who don't get along. The differences are very minimal. And what's happening overseas right now, I think, is more of a power struggle within the current government than a religious struggle.
Well, do you categorize yourself either as a Shia or a Sunni?
I would be a Sunni Muslim, but I don't go around and say that because I don't want to create divisions amongst Muslims.
Okay. My lovely wife.
Yeah.
And she is lovely. She is an angel. You know, I always say when I die, I'm going to hell because God gave me an angel on earth, and I still screwed it up. You know, yeah. That's my favorite line. But she's a terrific person, and she brought out a point once. She said, you know, it's amazing how all religions preach tolerance, yet the one constant historically is that religions divide. And you can't take, you can't dispute
that.
Well,
from an Islamic point of view, that would be the devil coming in and creating divisions so that you don't have a cohesive unit.
But it's the same with the Christian religions. Yeah. I mean, look how many denominations there are in the Christian religion. Well, there's got to be thousands of them. You know?
Well, I learned something after September 11th. There are two types of people in this world. There are those who want to work towards peace and justice, and there are those who are full of hate and want to create those divisions. And you can choose which type of person you want to be, but I think that there's forces in this world. I mean, you see people after the horrific events coming together and trying to make things better and getting the true message out, and then you see other people and other religious groups who want to just foster more hate and create more fear and more divisions. And that kind of reporting actually does a disservice to the American public, because there are so many people out there who are fearful of mainstream Islam, and we are now seeing the repercussions of this. We have seen discrimination and hate crimes and even murder has occurred in the United States against Muslims as a result of people's ignorance and fear of Islam. Yeah. One thing I like to tell people to kind of calm their nerves is there's an estimated 6 to 9 million Muslims in the United States. 30% of those Muslims, which would maybe be around, if we have our estimates correct, 3 million, have been in this country since the 1700s. We've been here for a long time. We're part of the American fabric. So this idea that Muslims are going to take over or change wasn't here until those horrific events of September 11th. And then all of a sudden the media in the last couple of years has really been on this fear-based, hate-mongering, presentation type style that we're getting right now.
Well, I read somewhere, and this was a long time ago, I can't give you a reference, unfortunately, I wish I could, was that if a Muslim could not achieve, achieve going to heaven, if they practiced their faith in a country which was not ruled by Islamic law, and what their charge would be is whatever country they're in is to change that country from whatever it is to an Islamic state, and that's their responsibility. Am I way off base? Did I read something wrong, or is there somewhere that written somewhere?
I have never read that. What I know is that we are told Islamically, here in the United States, we are to follow the law of the land. And our government at the mosque is elected democratically. So if Muslims grow and they get to a point where they're in office, they may put out a law that would fall under, the guise of Islam somehow, but then that would have to be democratically voted upon by the populace.
Okay.
So there is this notion that Muslims want to take over the world or incorporate Sharia law is not true. The Quran says there is no compulsion in religion. This means we cannot force people to be Muslims. And God has also said in the Quran that if he wanted to, he could have made, everybody a believer. And instead, he's given people free will and given them the choice to make the decisions that they want in life. And so we are not to force religion on people. That's against our basic beliefs.
Okay. Well, it's interesting because sometimes what you hear or what you read, whatever, and I wish I could tell you this is a legitimate statement, but is so much different than what people profess when you speak to them about Islam.
And yes.
But I think this is a problem of most religions. If you take the Bible, the Christian Bible, there are some verses in the Christian Bible that are quite horrific. I mean, they literally profess, take the person's eye out, kill your wife. There's all sorts of things, especially in the Old Testament,
yes.
Some brutal stuff. And if you took that literally, well, you would say, well, the Christianity, anyway. All right, enough of that. We do have a question, and I'm going to say this incorrect. Shiria. Did he spell that correctly? We have a
Yeah, Sharia law.
Sharia law. Okay,
Sharia law.
What is your position on Sharia law? That's a
I think I just stated it. Since there is no compulsion in religion, we can't force Islam on people. I believe in following God's commandments, but I'm in a country where I must first follow the law of the land. If I lived in a Muslim country, and actually most Muslims consider that there is no true Muslim country in the world, because many of the Muslim nations are under dictatorship, and the law is not Islamic law. It's a law that's been convoluted.
Okay, now we're going to get to some hardcore questions, because of course, I don't think anyone would disagree with what you say, and you say, that's wonderful, I buy that, no problem. But when we see some of the countries in the Middle East, and granted, a lot of these were formed by during the British Empire and all that, and it's a convoluted situation in and of itself, but we find that they are, they're not advocating what you're advocating. They are the leaders. Obviously,
I could give you an example. Like in Saudi Arabia, women are not allowed to drive. It has nothing to do with Islam. It's just a law that they have passed.
But if I can make a blanket comment and just a generalization, if you had to take the standard of living of countries, those that are Islamic are probably on the lower echelon. Lower end of the scale. There seems to be and primarily because the way appears the way the religion is promulgated in those states, free enterprise, individual initiative, criticism of the way of the current way things are done, those are big no-nos apparently within some of these Islamic nations, and they will always trail behind, and they'll always be hundreds of years behind other countries where there is total freedom of religion, where you can criticize any religion, be any religion or no religion if you want, and there's no one can care less.
That's a great question. I would beg to differ by saying that many of the so-called Islamic countries are run by cultural laws or expectations. In Islam, you are to question authority. You are to have democratic discussions. As far as the economics question, though, I don't know if I can answer that because, I mean, the majority of Muslims in the world right now are not Arab. They are in India, and India is thriving economically right now, even though they have many poor there. There's a large Muslim population in China, too. But I think that the economics are probably more just opportunity that happened in the way that the world evolved.
Right. Is not India primarily a Buddhist country with a minority of Muslims, and Pakistan broke away from India to be the Muslim section, so to speak, the Muslim neighborhood, so to speak? Pakistan is Muslim.
Correct.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
And India is primarily Buddhist.
Yes, but there's a huge Muslim.
Right,
I mean, you know, the majority of the world's over in that part of the world.
Yeah.
So I know that there's 1.4 billion Muslims in the world, and most of them are in that area.
All right, so there's 1.4 billion Muslims. There are about 6.6 billion people in the world, 15, 30, 45.
Yeah, one out of every four people
about one, that's right,
is a Muslim.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, very good. All right, well, these are, I think, some of the dichotomies that you run into. I mean, you see one thing and you hear another.
Yeah.
Now, I have Muslim friends, and they're really nice people. They haven't jihaded me once. You know what I mean. I mean, they're like you and I. Let me make another observation, and then I'm going to let you get to your thing, because I got to get this out.
Okay.
My friends are just every denomination, you name it, they are. They're everything from their own religion that they made up to hardcore Christians. And I, you know, I was... You know what? I forgot my question. I just lost it out of my head, so I'm gonna. It's gonna pop back in. Oh, by the way, we did get an email, and it said that you sound like you're in an echo and far away, and I don't know how we're gonna fix that. So we're gonna continue our broadcast, and I will apologize if our guest sounds like she's in an echo. We have everything set up absolutely perfectly. Every little wires are, and we don't have any warnings or anything like that. So if it's slightly echoey, we apologize. I'll have to work on that and bring my technician in and find out if we can fix it. You sound great to me on the headphones, so
okay.
I'm not certain if it's their end or our end, so I apologize. All right, so we're going to go with that.
One of the other points that I'd like to make, though, is in the days following September 11th, Muslims worldwide condemned the acts of those terrorists. And often the American public is not hearing this, but... the sheikhs, which are like the priests, the grand muftis, the presidents, the kings of the kingdoms of the various countries in the Islamic world, all issued statements condemning those acts. And I think the problem that we run into here is that we are a minority. We don't have control of the media. We don't have the political power to push our message and for mainstream Americans to hear that. And it really does a disservice to all of us.
Well. I think if you have to ask the man on the street, and they say, well, if what, Allison, you say is dominant, not only true, but dominant, why can't the people in the Middle East, the Sunnis, the Shias, and everyone else, why can't they seem to get their act together? Why do they keep on killing each other? Why can't they get along? I mean, isn't there enough Muslims? If only a small portion... are the terrorists, the antagonists, the separatists, and all
that?
Well,
I think they're fighting factors all over the world. I mean, we look at Africa. There are several countries that are in the midst of civil war right now and have small factions, and I think that this is just part of a natural process of human evolution, is that we are fighting. There are a lot of Muslim countries like Morocco and Algeria and, you know, Egypt and, you know, India and Pakistan and areas like that where the Muslims, I shouldn't say Pakistan because there is some problems there right now, but Malaysia and Indonesia and China. China's got a huge Muslim population where you're not seeing these things happen.
We have a piece of email. They said that they wanted to correct you. The largest Muslim population, he says, is in Indonesia. So our caller says.
Okay.
He just wrote in. And he says that Muslims have a higher birth rate, statistically speaking. Okay. All righty. Well, I got everything.
Thank you.
I got about everything off my chest that I want, all the questions that I had, and the last question fell out of my head for some reason. I just ready to give it. But
some of the other things that happened after September 11th is the security forces here within the United States went around and rounded up many Muslims and put them in detention. Some of them were rounded up without the knowledge of their family members. However, over 1,000 people were rounded up, and only one has been sentenced and convicted. And that was a gentleman by the name of, let me see if I can find it here. I always do his name wrong. I believe it's Zacharias Massawi. And he was directly linked to the attacks of September 11th. So out of 9 million Muslims in the United States, you have less than 0.01% of individuals who are involved in terrorist activities. And so statistically, this demonstrates that this is not a mainstream movement. But one of the things that have really concerned us is this trend of hate that's taken off in the media, and then the Military Commissions Act that was instituted in September of 2006. That act allows for individuals who are U.S. citizens or non-U.S. citizens deemed enemy combatants by the president or the executive branch of the United States to be detained, eternally detained, or indefinitely detained, I think is the correct term, and also to be taken away without their families knowing, and they lose their right to a judge, jury, and trial by peers, and they also lose the right to see the evidence. And they can also be tortured and now sentenced to death. Now, one thing that one of the lawyers was saying that was defending a Guantanamo Bay individual from Egypt is that when she went to Egypt, everybody in Egypt, the lawyers that she met with there, said, you know, the United States was the envy and human rights of the world up until the Bush administration. And now, with our current actions in Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and this new Military Commissions Act, we are no longer the human rights leader in the world. We're violating the rights that we used to put pressure on countries like China and Russia for committing against their civilians. And hopefully this will be changed with the next president.
You're right. It is frightening, Allison, that what we hear as something good for America, good for the citizens because it's good for our security, is exactly what we abhor when other countries do that. But, you know, it's like every other country, when they do something, they're doing it for a good reason, and everyone else is doing it for a bad reason, you know,
right.
or for some devious reason. And I couldn't agree with you more. My son is always wondering whether or not I'm going to be around the next day after some of my broadcasts. He says, you're going to be a detainee one of these days.
Well, you know, we get visits, too. We have, the FBI has done a great job of visiting Muslims and protecting The United States, which I think, you know, is a great thing. But yeah, we've had visits. I've had friends who've been visited and asked if they know anybody that sells grenade launchers or if they've purchased any grenade launchers. And we know that our phones have been tapped and our emails are being watched. And we know that our bank accounts are being monitored. I had a friend who transferred money overseas and her bank accidentally sent her the letter that was supposed to go to Homeland Security. So the government is watching us. But what I don't understand is, our current legal system works well, and it's worked well for us since the Constitution was drawn up. Why is there such a need when statistically the threat here, you know, we've convicted one person since 9/11? Why is there a need to create these stringent new rules that violate humanity and allows the executive branch of the government to torture and execute American citizens? I don't see how you can explain that. And then the other thing that's really been concerning to us is in the last year, and this is starting to sound like an Anne Frank novel, Halliburton was awarded a $385 million contract to build internment camps in the United States. And on the, I believe it was the New York Stock Exchange listing or on the press, the media release said that these were for special situations. So all of a sudden we have a loss of civil liberties. We have internment camps that are being built. And I'm seeing a disturbing trend here, and we don't know where it's going.
Yeah, I heard Bill Moyer give a speech, and he talked about the Bush administration and the loss of liberties and whatever. And afterwards he said, and that now we have the Democrats who want to go in a different direction. Unfortunately, they can't distinguish the difference between a wind vane and a compass. So they don't know where they're going, basically. It was kind of a funny thing, and everyone laughed. But it's true. And I don't, I personally don't have much, I'm not very optimistic with the change of Congress, whether or not we can have any change at all in the direction that we're going.
Yeah, I think we need to see a change in presidency, and we'll have to wait.
Yeah, and a lot, and unfortunately, I think a lot more than that. I mean, there are too many people who believe their constituencies believe that if they don't talk tough, you know, they're going to walk right. You know, they're going to be a terrorist in every, in, you know, in every town, blowing up every street. And I think that's very, very misguided. Okay, why don't you? We still have some time. This is going to be our broadcast, by the way.
Okay.
And I wonder who won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that we got all the, I remember
your question.
I remember my comment. All right. I have a Jewish friend. Bright guys, really nice, you know. And I tell them all, I said, you know, the only problem with the Jewish, and you could apply this to anybody, Italians, and I'm picking on my Jewish friend just for an example. I said, the only problem with Jewish people is they're Jewish, you know. And let me tell you my point here, is that it seems that people get divided when other people act or seem different than others. And I said, you know, the Jewish people, they wear the yarmulke and stuff like that. It's almost they walk around saying, hey, I'm not like you, I'm Jewish. And so I plead to the Muslim community, you know, don't be different. I mean, you know, believe what you want to believe. But
I'm going to beg to disagree with you, because isn't one of the things that makes the United States so beautiful is the cornucopia of people.
Oh, absolutely.
That
right.
We have here. And a country is richer for the diversity of its people.
Agree.
But when you have this attitude, it seems like when people have a common enemy.
Yeah.
It pulls them together.
That's right.
And we've seen that in American history. You know, the Indians, the Native American Indians, were heathens and needed to be annihilated and moved
right.
In the 1800s and early 1900s. We've seen it with the spying Japanese, you know, who were sent to the internment camps. We've also seen it even in the civil liberties movement or the civil rights movement with African Americans. and how they were a people who wanted too much. They were asking for too much and needed to stay in their place.
Right.
And then we evolved on to the Russians and communism.
Right.
And the evil empire. And then we all pulled together for that. And so now it appears, and this is kind of how I take it, it's the time for the Muslims to be the bad guy. And unfortunately, we're working and trying to get the message out and struggling against these forces and these divisions. But, you know, any time you have divisiveness, it's not beneficial.
Yeah.
We should all be working together and working towards peace and cooperation.
Yeah. Oh, and not that I object to that. I'm saying that, first of all, when you have a group, they tend to stay together. They tend to stay together. They need to disperse and get into, you know, just with everybody else, rather than staying among themselves. And then when they stay among themselves and they appear different, I said, then you start, you get this chasm, and it's more difficult to bridge that gap. That was my point. And that's why I just tell my friends, the only problem with Jewish people is Jewish. The only problem with Italians is they're Italian. And we should all be Americans. That's my point.
Oh, yeah. You know. Well, actually, one thing that's really interesting is there are many Muslims in America who, like Muslim women, Muslim men, who do not wear the traditional dress. The women don't wear the headscarves. They work side by side with their co-workers, and their co-workers don't even know they're Muslim.
Right.
And I hear this all the time because we hear some of the complaints and the fears that mainstream Americans have, and my Muslim friends will laugh and say, you know, they don't even know I'm Muslim, but because they fit right in and they look just like your neighbor.
Yeah, so. And I guess if and I'm extrapolating, and this is a false assumption also, but if every group, whether it be Muslim, whatever group it was, they all were that way.
If we would all give up our distinct identities and mesh into one unit, the world would be a better place. That's what you're saying.
Not our beliefs or anything like that, but the appearance of division, I guess. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think it's an attitude.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's an attitude.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but I'm just saying that it would probably help. But with that, I shall keep my mouth shut.
Brick houses that are two-story with the same color windows.
Absolutely.
Yes, and the world would be a better place.
Very good. Okay. Why don't you take off? I think you had a couple of subjects you wanted to discuss a little bit, right?
Well, actually, one of the other things that I wanted to talk about, let me see here, I'm looking at my notes, is some of the hate crimes that we have experienced as a result of the fear and discrimination and misunderstanding that's going on. Just here in Tulsa alone, we have had two incidences in the last 12 months of women chased in their cars. We've been rammed and bumped in the parking lots and been told terrorists. One of the funniest things that Muslims actually find quite funny is when people say, go home. You know, go on home. And the majority of people that hear that statement, we're born in the United States. They are home. This is home to them. We've also had, it's not uncommon to have racial slurs, just hateful things said at the mall and the grocery store. And unfortunately, we have had some deaths. There was a lady who was gunned down in her neighborhood pushing her child a month and a half ago. So we're having a difficult time. One of the other things that I find very concerning is in California last month, they had a radio station do a talk show, and the talk show was a hoax, but the title of the talk show was, let's put a Jewish star on all Muslims, you know, a crescent. Let's put a crescent on all Muslims and let's have them ID'd. And the talk show host wanted to see what the response was of the callers. The majority of callers who called in were for this.
Oh my goodness gracious.
And this just shows, this just shows a lack of education of people are this fearful and they're this worried. We need to do our best to get the word out there and educate the public. And there were a few callers that did call in and say, this is, you know, just atrocious. How can you be saying this? And then at the end, the talk show host scolded many of the callers for having such viewpoints. But this is a national concern, I think. It's not healthy for America for us to have this hate amongst each other.
Yeah, we had the detainment camps in during World War II. You know, we pulled that stupid thing. You know, people, when we talk about the immigration, I'm going to get off on an immigration issue just to show you, give you a parallel. A friend of mine said, who gave a speech one time on this, he said, everybody here who's against the Mexicans from coming in because, you know, they're not Americans, we've got a problem because neither are we Americans. We took it from someone else,
that's right,
you know.
Yeah.
So we have to watch what we're from where we speak, you know.
That's right.
So
the only Americans are the American Indians.
Yeah. Well, we still have we have about 14 minutes more to go.
Okay.
On it. All right. Is there another subject you'd like to bring up? And you know, I get so enthralled in what you're talking about and so interested, and then I forget what I was going to ask you. You know, so I'll leave it up to you. Where's my
Well, one other thing that I would like to talk about that we hear on more radical TV shows, and I've seen it myself, I'll go through the cable channels and come across some of the extremist right-wing religious shows, and you always hear two verses in the Quran taken out of context, and one has to do with the pagans, slay them wherever you see them, and I would like to give the rest of the story to this verse. What happened is in early Islam, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, the first 10 years he lived in a city called Mecca in Saudi Arabia. And as he was going around trying to convert people to Islam, the Meccan idol worshippers, which are called the pagans, started becoming concerned as more and more followers grew. And so they started torturing the people. They killed some of the early Muslims, and then finally near the latter part of his stay in Mecca, they starved him out, and they had a boycott against them. And up until this point in time, the Muslims were not reacting to this. It finally got so bad that the Prophet, peace be upon him, sent a delegation of Muslims to go live with the Christians in Abyssinia at the time. And then near the very end of his stay in Mecca, they were going to kill him. And so they fled and they went to a city called Medina. And there in Medina, they lived side by side with the Jews. They wrote up treaties with the Jews while the delegation that lived in Abyssinia with the Christians came back. And the pagans were going to attack and come in and take many of the Muslims back to Mecca as slaves or kill them. And so at that point in time, God revealed the verse that said, if you find the pagans, you can kill them in as an act of war, aggression for all the oppression that they had occurred. And so that's what that means. It does not mean go out and kill pagan people at, you know, free will. That's mm-hmm. under a specific set of circumstances, fighting oppression.
What about, I guess what most people fear are the terrorists, those suicide bombers.
Yes.
There are, apparently now there are many schools where they're training children from a very, very early age to hate, you know, the West or whatever,
yeah.
Christianity.
Kind of like
or
the
where,
Jesus Camp movie that's out
that's right.
Right
the
now.
Same,
yeah.
The same.
It's the same concept.
Same concept.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they apparently they after a while, they're all willing to give themselves up.
Yeah.
You know, for the cause.
Actually,
is that as much of a big of problem as TV makes it seem?
I don't see it as a large scale problem, but I'm very concerned as a Muslim that there's parts of the world where Islam is being twisted and taught in such a manner, because suicide bombing is a horrific act that's a ticket to hell. In Islam, you can't kill yourself. Suicide, you know, is forbidden. And also, you cannot kill innocent people. So a suicide bomber who gets on a bus in Israel and blows him or herself up is not a martyr.
Well, how do they... Will they... Well, I mean...
How do they convince these people?
We hear that they are
this?
Martyrs. The mother, for example, of the boy who blows himself up is... I mean, she's revered in the area, given a special amount of respect for what her son has done, and this is what we hear.
I think you have to look at the context of the situation and study it very carefully. Israel has the fourth largest army in the world, and the Palestinian people have been oppressed for many years, and we're going on into the second generation of oppression. They have lost their homes. There is no due process of law. The wall is going up now, and they can't even get to their properties in order to farm that might be on the other side of the wall. And so they continue to lose their land. The United Nations has spoken out against this for over 40 years now, and yet nobody in the world is doing anything about it. And I think what's happened is these people are so oppressed. I mean, what would it take for you to blow yourself up? Nothing to live for is what it would take.
That's right. That's
and
correct.
I think that these people are so desperate, and there is no future. There is no home. Many of them live in camps. Many of them don't have employment. Many of them have lost family members that they have given up the will to live. And people have twisted the religion and used it to their advantage to get young children
right.
to go and commit these horrific
right.
acts.
I agree.
And so the families are so lost and destitute that they go along with it.
I have a general question. Are there as many denominations of Islam as there are of Christianity?
I only know of four denominations, although there are more. But, you know, you have Sunni, you have Shia, you have Nation of Islam, which is not, which...
That's right. I forgot
about
that.
Which is discriminatory, and mainstream Muslims don't consider it a pure form of Islam. And then you have Sufis, who are more of like the spiritual side of Islam. Now, in other countries, in India and Pakistan and stuff, you have other sects,
okay.
too. They do exist.
Are there different levels of practice by Muslims of the Islamic faith in the Islamic faith, just like in well, take the Jewish. There's the fundamentalist, and then there's the reformist, and whatever. You know, is it the same thing, or is it pretty well consistent throughout?
Yeah, it's very consistent. The core concept is the five pillars: that you should believe in God, that you should fast during Ramadan, that you should pray five times a day, that you should give in charity, and that you should make the pilgrimage to Mecca once in your life if you can afford it. And those are the basic requirements. Now, God does not discriminate against male or female or against people in status except by how religious they are. And the more pious you are, then the higher level you are in God's sight.
All right. Well, what about those people who are working amongst other people, like your friend says, they don't even know a Muslim. How does she pray five times a day? Don't you have to bow down and face the east or something?
There are many Muslims who don't follow the basic five pillars. And there's many Muslims in the United States. I would say probably over half the Muslims in the United States, females, do not wear the headscarf. So you're not even going to know they're Muslim.
Right.
And they're just Muslim by name.
Yeah. Well, do you have to pray a certain way, or can you just pray within yourself? Or
no, there's a set prescribed manner of doing.
You have to be
prayers.
On your knees, for example, and
you stand knee prostrate and put your head down on the carpet and then come back up.
And
that's righty. Five times a
so
day.
So if you didn't do that five times a day, you would
You get bad deeds. And we go back to the Day of Judgment, where you're trying to get as many good deeds as you can.
Okay.
The purpose for prayer is to remind you, you say the verses out of the Quran, so you're saying God's word, God's guidance, God's wisdom.
Okay.
And the idea is to do the prayer five times a day, so you're always God conscious, and you're focused on what is good.
Geez, I don't pray at all. My goodness gracious. Am I going into the sub-basement when I die? Hold on a second. I think we have another call here. The question is there four main schools of Islam jurisprudence? Which one does your guest adhere to? Four main schools of Islam jurisprudence. I'm not familiar with them, so you'll have to help me out with that.
Yeah, well, there's like Hanafi and Hanbali. And no, I do not prescribe to a certain school.
Okay. All right.
And those are four scholars who spent their life studying Islam, and they've written books. and like Shafi's another one, and they help answer the finer points of the religion, like prayer and how to pray, and, you know, do you raise your arms here or put your arms across your chest, and certain aspects like that.
Do the offspring of American Muslims, if their children, when they're raised as Muslim, are the families experiencing what most other religions face, and that there's a lessening of the religion, or the children are not as devout as the parents, and it, you know.
Well, that's a very good question. Actually, the question that your email caller asked about which school, do I belong to? I like that question because we don't have an opportunity in the United States to choose a school. We don't have the scholars here that can educate us on those four schools. We are very limited in the number of scholars. And actually what we're finding is that the United States government is prohibiting scholars from entering this country. And even one scholar who was a U.S. citizen and born here was recently kicked out of the country. And many that come here to teach are being denied access. So we are finding it very challenging as Muslims to gain the religious knowledge that we would like to have.
Okay.
We would have to travel overseas to obtain higher levels of thought.
Yeah. Well, I want all of my listeners to know that you do not look like a terrorist to me. you appear to be just a very, very nice person.
Thank you very
much. And I take you as my best friend.
I can try to look mean if you like for me, too.
Okay. We have about 3 more minutes. Is there anything that you have? We have some questions.
Multiple emails. Now, I just want to make just quickly through the key points that we've talked about in the last hour is that, you know, Muslims have spoken out repeatedly against the attacks of September 11th, and we've made these statements, and they're not being aired. We are a minority. We don't have the push to get the message out there, but we are trying our best, too. It seems like those sensationalized stories are really driving the content, the fear-based stories. And the other thing is that we're really concerned about where our civil liberties are going in this country and the loss of our constitutional rights. We are also concerned about these internment camps that are being built here and what they are for. And I hope that our democracy will return to the state that it was 8 years ago.
Yep. A friend of mine who's a Muslim, he owns a restaurant down here on 101st Street. I always tell him, I said, you know, you guys need a good PR manager.
That's right.
You're really good. You really need a good PR manager. And I said, if there's one thing that I don't associate with Muslims, and that's smiling. And, and I know you guys do. I mean, I know you guys do. But it seems that every time we have a picture of someone of the Islamic faith or some Muslim, you know, they never smile. They always have this somber look. You know, they looks like they they almost look mean because they're so unhappy and serious. And I go, you know, lighten up a little bit.
I have that in one of my presentations. I have pictures of what you normally see of Muslims with burning flags and with masks and guns in their hands. And then I have the pictures you don't see. Like right after September 11th at the candlelight vigils, you have I've got a picture of American Muslims holding flags and a candle. That was never printed in mainstream media. These are the pictures that my Christian friends kept saying, where are the Muslims? You know, why aren't they speaking out? You're not seeing it. I have pictures of smiling men and women, and just don't see that.
Yeah. Well, you have an uphill battle. Yeah. It's going to be a long, drawn-out battle.
President Bush would say, we're working hard.
your concerns are the concerns of really most Americans as well, Muslim and otherwise.
Yes.
You know, we are all losing our liberties. Of course, those people under a greater level of suspicion will suffer more than those under less. You know, Norwegians are probably under less suspicion than the people from the Middle East. So I sympathize with that. Allison, I want to thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Thank you for inviting me here.
Yep, this program will be repeated all the way through Thursday morning till 6:30 a.m. on Thursday. So there'll be plenty of opportunity for those people who are listening to the Super Bowl rather than listening to the station to tune in and listen. If we get some emails that I cannot answer directly, I will give you a buzz. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, that's fine. You can forward them to me.
All righty. Okay, and thank you very much, everyone, for listening in. This concludes our broadcast. And we'd like to thank Grant Shaker's Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, folks, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away from you, or you are striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Until next time, stay well, stay tuned.